Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. Welcome back. I've got a very special guest on, a longtime, very close friend of mine. His name's Carrie, and Carrie first came to me as a normal dude looking to improve his love life, social life back in, when was that, 2010?
Yeah, I still have one of our exercise videos from Inner Confidence that's dated March 10th, 2009. So I was just watching so it's been over 10 years.
Yeah. Amazing. And Carrie has, gone through, he was a total, badass, went through all the curriculum, became a coach for me. And we worked together for a couple of years back in New York. I think that was like 4 or 5 years ago. And since then, you've been kind of on the West Coast. I've been over here in Kiev. Haven't spoken in a while, but he's been up to some crazy things. He's in a polyamorous relationship. He has two girlfriends, which is a lot of guys dream about that, and not many guys are able to do it. And I was one of the guys who was able to do it, but it lasted about a week.
I don't think you're built for any too many long-term relationships in this phase of your life.
So. Yeah. It was a crash and burn disaster. we can get into that later, but I was super, super stoked to have you on, Carrie. Welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate it. Thanks. It's like a reunion again. So it's kind of nice to be around.
Yeah. So tell us your story, because it's a very interesting one. Many accolades, including the air sex champion of the world, literally. So tell us your story and about your journey.
Yeah. So you and I met at the beginning of my phase when I decided to be better at the social dating thing, because I didn't have a girlfriend. Probably my last girlfriend was like, or interaction with a woman was like when I was like 21. And then when that relationship ended, I probably didn't see anybody for 5-6 years. And that was kind of when I that's when I discovered, how a lot of guys are aware with the game, and discovered that, hey, there's actually people that focus on the skill set of being better, socially with people and with women. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. And that's where I started my journey and discovered you in Marina Del Rey, doing workshops on how to be more confident with women. And I think the biggest thing I got from our training together is the ability to manage tension and be a grounded, masculine, male energy, masculine energy, so that, one could be attracted with women. And that's kind of how the whole journey started. And, along the way, like you mentioned, I did a bunch of things. I was very systematic and pragmatic at being better at this. And I think a lot of people that get into this or have trouble with social skills is because they're so analytical and pragmatic about, whether it's programming, engineering, math, or that kind of left side of the brain kind of people. And that's where my focus was. And I guess the strength to that is that, hey, I spent a lot of time focusing on skills to be better in this area one by one. And, working with you was a big part of building that foundation to where I am now, which is, I want to say I'm the beast of life, but I did check off a couple boxes. That's really cool, where my reality compared to where it was and where, some guys see it is quite different, where, right now I'm dating two women that one I've been dating for 5 years now and another I've been dating for 6 months. And about 2 months into the girl I've been dating for 6 months, I introduced her to in polyamory, they call it your primary, the person that you see primarily the most. And I introduced introduced them to each other, and they got along. So my job was to play matchmaker, make sure that, they liked each other. They didn't want to kill each other. They weren't trying to one up each other. And it all kind of worked out where I was just, the wingman to make that moment happen. And then from there, it just, snowballed into a three-way relationship where the three of us hang out. It's kind of cool, going out in public and then and then having people, you know, kind of stare or make stare at a little short, little 5'6" Asian guy with, you know, two Hispanic babes, Latina babes. So that's kind of a nice little bucket list.
You guys walk hand in hand as three, you know, like
yeah, you know. Yeah, whether I'm in the middle or leading the way or in from behind, I mean, it varies. Mm-hmm. They're both kind of my height, so I can put my arms around both of them, which is kind of nice, as opposed to one being like super tall, which I've dated before in the past, which is tough logistically to hold hands. But yeah, so it's kind of a nice, fun experience, and it's been a kind of pretty far journey than where I first started out, where, you know, in my early 20s, I couldn't, you know, talk to or interact with women much. So
yeah, and I want to backtrack a little bit. I have a ton of questions about the the relationship, but you were an absolute machine about, you know, stepping into tension, learning how to deal with tension and putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. Didn't you start a blog around something about Be Uncomfortable or something like that?
Yeah, I had a blog called beuncomfortable.com, and unfortunately my web host went down, or something happened where I forgot about it, and a lot of the content went down. But yeah, I started a blog called beuncomfortable.com as kind of like an excuse to find things to do to purposely put myself in uncomfortable situations where it's okay to have this tension around you, whether it was things like, you know, going to the grocery store and buying groceries with, you know, $5 in change and holding up the line and having people stare at me like, why you think so pay this, and just be able to sit in it, relish in it, and understand that this volatility around me doesn't have to affect me, and just be like a lightning rod that grounds the tension and be okay with the situation. And that was like an example of the things I did to, you know, crazy, because the little weird stuff that I did to manufacture tension and be okay with it.
Yeah, I call those social freedom exercises these days. Yeah. And I've got a laundry list of about 18 to 20 of them, I believe. Part of the, you know, to pass from, I believe it's a yellow belt to an orange belt in the leverage group, is you have to complete all 20 of the social freedom exercises. And some of them get pretty aggressive, but I don't think any of them, well, compared to the stuff you did, I don't think they're that tough. You did some crazy shit. Tell us a couple other, I remember you got on the loudspeaker at a grocery store with my girlfriend Allison one time.
That's right. Yeah. Went to a pet store and, hey, can we use your loudspeaker? I remember going, at the time we were in Venice Boardwalk, and going up to people and asking, hey, are you going to eat that, while they're at a restaurant? I remember walking.
Did you get any bites?
Yeah, I was surprised that people were generous with their food. It was like, sure, here you go. Feel free to have one. And I'm like a complete stranger walking up to them asking if they're going to share their fries. And there were some, you know, warm, compassionate human beings out there that were like, sure, weird guy asking me. I remember this was back then 10 years ago when like being a transgender or a cross-dresser, I guess, wasn't normal. And I wore like a skirt and walked down the boardwalk just to see see how that was like. Did that. Like you said, I went to a air sex show. You could Google, air sex, and it's like air guitar, but you mime sex. And I went to one of the shows and they said, hey, anyone can enter. So I was like, oh shoot, I made this blog and I gotta practice what I preach. So I was in this phase where, okay, if anyone can enter, then sure, go ahead. I raised my hand and I competed in the Los Angeles Air Sex Championships. And actually won that and went on to Texas to compete in the world championships and won that too. So that was a cool little phase where I worked on that aspect.
You were on like Playboy TV for that too, right?
Yeah. Playboy TV interviewed me for a little segment piece for their show, you know, a web clip. And that was fun. So I got a lot of mileage out of that, you could say, during my run. of using that as a life experience to build on and share stories about and use that during like social interactions.
So. Yeah. How important do you think learning how to deal with tension and going through those exercises and starting that blog, how important do you think that was for being able to position yourself to as a guy who could, you know, date two women at the same time?
Yeah.
Or have two girlfriends, which is different. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think what I learned working with Inner Confidence was such a huge, important foundational skill of being able to manage tension. Because at the core, I think, you know, with all the game and tactics and strategies aside, with you know how to you know banter with a girl, how to tease, like all that stuff, I think is not as important as the core of what it means to be a masculine, you know, person that attracts women that are feminine. And which is be able to manage tension, be grounded, be the rock in the storm for women or anyone that has more feminine energy, to you know come from a place of certainty where when they're like flustered or worried that you're the calm in the storm and able to hold ground. I think that's such a core foundational aspect of being a man that you know that's what I got from IC. So.
Yeah, and it, I mean that's really the foundation for everything. And if I could pick one thing, you know, that's probably the most important thing is developing that ability to stay calm, cool, and collected under pressure. Because for me, you know, when I was terrible with women, I was just scared to death. A hot woman came around, I was like, you know, I'd start like shaking sometimes, and I'd just completely lose my shit. You know, especially if I went to approach her. And so the whole process, and it's so awesome when someone takes it on like you did, because, you know, no one wants to be uncomfortable, right? We spend our whole life trying to be comfortable. So stepping into discomfort is where all the growth is. And there's no way to cheat that. There's no way to get around it. You know, you'll never have the success you want really in anything unless you can, you know, move into that tension and learn to deal with it. So
yeah, it was just, it's, yeah. And it didn't happen overnight. It was just a little bit every day, a little bit every day, a little bit every day. And then surprisingly over time, how much it accumulates and what you can manage and handle. And, you know, like I said, that transferred over to life in my work world, you know, career wise, you know, it's how amazing it is that when you're confident or when you're able to manage tension, you're perceived as confident. You're perceived as knowing what they're doing. People can start trusting you. Knowing that you'll perform or got their back, and that becomes reality when you're able to manage tension as a baseline. So,
yeah, tell us what are you doing for work?
Well, you know, I do you know geeky stuff. I handle a lot of operations, tech. I'm not like a programmer, but a lot of things I do relate to programming or doing spreadsheets. I spend my day automating a bunch of stuff. One day, I think I'll probably start posting and sharing in the group, but I sorted out a CRM for dating finally. And
oh, nice.
Yeah.
So that was amazing. Kind
of, really dorky stuff, but you know.
Well, it's you know, so many of us are analytical. And you're a great example of someone who, you know, who's super analytical. You spend your day, you know, being analytical, but you have to be able to shift out of that, you know, that state and get into your right brain or your creative side or whatever you want to call it, to deal with women. So, do you have any specific advice for analytical guys on how to cultivate that, that skill?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's our biggest strength and weakness because, you know, when we were coaching, some of the guys that get the best results were the ones that didn't really think much. I guess let's just say their left side was their strength, and they were like, I'll be shocked at them taking action so haphazardly, but that giving a shot, failing and learning from it, that's where the left side comes in. Oh, I did this, that I could have had a better outcome if I changed, if I did this differently, but they would just take such great action without even thinking about it. So what analyticals, their greatest strength is also the greatest weakness. So a couple of things that I think helped me a lot, like one thing that I read from Mel Robbins, you know, she has a book called The 5-Second Rule. I mean, I guess you could say it's very similar to what's the pickup guy's name?
3 second rule of mystery. Yeah,
3 second rule of mystery. It's very similar, but it really does work. You know, you count down from 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you take action, and having someone there to help, you know, push you. I know you guys do a lot of the bets, which is great, because, you know, when there's money on the line, you know, there's money on the line and you don't do it, you don't get your money back. It's, and I think a big part of that, they're very basic tips, you know, like the things I'm sharing, I don't think anyone hasn't heard before if you've been around the self-improvement realm, but, having like an accountability partner, I think is key, that will hold you accountable, because it's so easy to count down, oh, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 3, 2, 1, but still stand there. But if you had a buddy that was out there with you, and you respected that person and you held each other accountable, the he or she will push you into approaching or taking action or doing these things and shutting off that side of your brain. It's really, I think that's one of the keys, you know, hanging out with guys that are looking to improve, that are on your same level, but also hang out with coaches and mentors that, that, you know, you respect or put on a pedestal, whatever, that you will listen to. And being coachable, I guess, was a huge part of, you know, making progress for me, where, you know, I don't really question. I mean, sometimes I question, you know, the things you asked me to do, but I'll question it after the fact, thinking that there's some method to the madness, and I'll analyze it later. I'm committing right now in this moment to take action, and I'll think about it later, and just let go and go for it.
Yeah. So tell us. So the process leading up to, you know, having two girlfriends. Tell us about like the journey you went through. You know, first you started, you know, getting more dates, dating higher quality women. Like, what were the kind of the milestones that were?
The milestone was dating, being able to, you know, have dates, and then, you know, dating a girl that was really my type and quote unquote making her my girlfriend. But then after a couple months, being bored with it and still seeking variety, but how do I do that without, you know, violating a commitment I made? And that it's like, so the moment that happened, I was like, okay, forget this. I'm not going to have an exclusive relationship anymore. I'm just going to casually date. And then as I kept doing that, I discovered that there's this, you know, jargon and terminology for these type of relationships, and they call it polyamory. Nowadays, I think it's a little bit more blurred, or I'm not like an expert on it per se. So I'm not like, I don't know the exact jargon and where the boundaries lie, where the definition of you're a swinger or you're polyamorous or whatnot. But as I kind of went down this casual dating thing, and I was just kind of, you know, learning more about it, I discovered that there's actually people that focus on this type of relationship, and there's words and there's, you know, like principles behind it. And I started just learning more about that and taking those and delivering it and putting my own, I guess, spin or perspective on it. And when I share that with others that I'm dating now from day one, when I make it as appealing as possible, they seem to like it and are okay with this kind of lifestyle.
Yeah. How was that process of, I guess, getting comfortable having the conversations with women that you were, you know, casually dating, who maybe wanted something more around, you know, being polyamorous or being, non-monogamous? What would, you know, 'cause that's a skill set, being able to express your needs basically in a way that doesn't like offend her or make her feel like she's not enough, or so on and so forth.
Yeah, I know, it's very true. And the funny thing is, what I discovered through the process and through the time is that it's so much easier when I'm able to do it on day one, because there's no emotional attachment to the other person and they're more likely to accept it. So the difficult part, I guess one of the keys that worked for me is letting the person know on the very first date that I meet them that this is how I roll, or this is what I believe in, because it's hard to have jealousy or be scared of these things or have a fear of loss when you didn't have them in the first place because you just met them. Like, imagine being married to someone for 20 years and then telling them you want to see other people versus meeting someone for the first time saying, oh, I want you to meet other people. You should meet other people too. I'm going to meet other people. Like there's no emotional attachment or possessiveness or jealousy or anything like that, 'cause you just met them. There's no different than someone that you just saw at Starbucks. There's no emotional memories that you've created with these people to change that. So the biggest, one of the biggest keys is sharing, talking about it on day one. And eventually you develop, or I developed a script or some guideposts on things that I want to hit when I deliver this message. And for the most part, they're pretty open to, 'cause like the big part of it is also how you frame it. It's not like, oh, well, I see you, I'm gonna go bang other people. You don't say that, you know, obviously, 'cause it goes both ways. And if, when you share it in a very like appealing way, they're okay with it.
Yeah. Tell us more about that. Those guidelines.
Sure. So for me, the path I usually take is I talk about, or my spiel is, you know, I like to say that, you know, one of the things that one of my perspectives on relationships is that I don't feel like anyone should own anyone else. Like they shouldn't have the right to tell anyone, who they should see, you know, 'cause you're not a slave, you're not an employee. I don't own you. You're an own person. And I believe that human beings, crave social connections with other people. So who am I to tell you who you could date, who you can date, can't date? You know, I'm not your father. I'm not, you know, someone like that. And I believe that, let's just say hypothetically, like you and I were married, or a boyfriend, girlfriend, let's just say your celebrity crush, I don't know, Ryan Gosling, you know, Dwayne Johnson, whatever, walks in, you know, looks at you, you know, gives you a little wink. You have a little smile on your face, you know, you get a little flush, you know, and you know, body parts start moving around. Just because you and I are together doesn't mean that your attraction for the other person turns off. Yeah. Now, what prevents you from go seeing the other person? Well, what happens in the Western culture is that, what's unfortunate is that, you know, there's guilt and shame behind, hey, you shouldn't be able to see another person when you're with me. And, you know, I don't think that's fair, because if you've, you know, got a chance to travel the world, whether in Europe or South America, their cultural perspectives on relationships is a lot more, you know, open and liberated about it. And, you know, my kind of rules are, as long as, number one, you know, you use protection, 'cause, you know, I believe in long-term health, and I think you should too. I also ask them, you know, like, are you looking to get married in the next 5 years? Are you looking to have kids in the next 5 years? You know, of course, if they say no to that, you know, talk about the protection rule. And number three, as long as everyone knows what's going on, you know, there's transparency behind it, you know, because like I don't need any baggage or drama. I don't need any of your guys texting me saying, hey, why are you texting my babe? I don't need any of that. And I don't think you need any of that either. And as long as everyone knows what's going on, I think, you know, that works. It should work for everybody. So that's kind of like close to how I kind of deliver it. And that resonates a lot with people, because they feel liberated and carefree about it. And it's literally just taking a step at a time. And the important part is to maintain that quote unquote frame and maintain those principles and views, which means as the relationship develops, don't be possessive or jealous about who that person is seeing. In fact, I go to links to ask them, oh, so are you seeing anybody cool? Tell me about him. Tell me about your past day. Oh, what'd you like about him? So I would actually let her know that it's a safe environment for her to share about her past dates first, mm-hmm. and then inquire about her current dates, which sets the tone that I'm not a jealous guy or possessive guy. And, you know, when I text you, I don't need you to text me back in 2 minutes. I'm never going to text you, you know, WYD, you know, what are you doing? Because mm-hmm. I'm following up with you. Anytime I'll text you, it'll be like, oh, I want to make sure you make it home safely. Can you text me when you get home, so I know you make it home safely, so I go to sleep and I don't have to, you know, put out flyers and call the popo or anything like that. You know, so I'll say things like that to help them still feel safe and secure in a relationship, which is what they want, but without the jealousy of ownership, possessiveness, where I need to know where you are, what you're doing, and I need you to get back to me within 2 minutes every time I text you. So when you put those elements together, it really sets the stage of, oh, I'm in this great relationship with someone that still cares about me, that still has, I can still have companionship. I can still come to him if I have like anything I want to talk about. Oh, he'll still take me to have great experiences and do cool things, but without having to, you know, be quote unquote boyfriend, girlfriend, married or whatnot.
Yeah, and it's so nice to encourage that openness and that freedom, because I think it's such a huge piece that's missing in standard Western relationships, is people just don't get to be themselves around their partner because they kind of put themselves in a box during the initial stages of the relationship because they want to be viewed in a certain way, right? Like, if I want you to like me, I'm going to only share things about myself that make me look good or basically encourage you to see me in a certain way. That's inauthentic at the end of the day. And that now then I'm trapped trying to maintain that persona. And you end up in relationships where you're trying to be this thing that you said you were, and she's trying to be this thing that she said she was, but no one's being fucking honest. And that kind of box that you put yourself in eventually becomes so uncomfortable to be in, and it totally makes you resent your partner, makes your partner resent you possibly, and you feel like they're now, you know, kind of like keeping you trapped, but you put yourself there in the first place by you know, by not having this open dialogue and not really sharing yourself because you didn't want to lose them, because you wanted to make sure the relationship worked.
Yeah. And what you, I think, yeah, what you said there was key. The key thing was fear of loss. And I think a lot of people say these things because they're in a fear of, if I don't say who I truly am, I'm going to lose my partner. And, you know, that was one of the key things during my journey that I discovered that, you know, for, you know, one of the girls I'm dating, a big piece of that was I was afraid to share the things that what I really wanted, because I was afraid that if I did, I would lose this person that I've been dating for 4 years. But on her side of the table, she wanted to know these things because for her, I don't know if this is true for women across the board, but if there wasn't transparency, she would make a mountain out of a molehill. So if I was like, I wasn't hanging out on Thursday night with her, she would think I'm out doing, you know, whatever it is in her mind that is, you know, hurtful for her, because I'm sure, you know, everyone's had traumatic relationship experiences. So whatever was traumatic for her in her past, she probably would manufacture that creative imagery on what I was doing. So ironically, if I didn't share, if I didn't have the transparency, that would cause her to lose her. So basically in my world, it was like, if I don't tell her what I'm doing, I'm afraid to tell her what I'm doing because I'm scared I'll lose her. But for her world, if you don't tell me what I'm doing, you're going to lose me. So it's like, I had to learn to overcome that belief of not wanting to share, because if I wasn't going to say what I was doing, she's going to leave anyways. If I'm scared, if I say what I'm going to say and she leaves, then she's going to leave anyway. So it's like logically, I might as well tell her what I'm doing. And
right.
that was my barrier. That was my my limiting belief, my hump to get over in this process.
Yeah, it's the way I like to say it is, you'll be happiest in a relationship when you get to be 100% yourself. And when you don't get to be 100% yourself, even if it's 99 or 98, that 1% can really fuck things up. And that 1% can turn into like this, it's basically like a need that's not being met, or a part of your you know, existence or your being that like you have to shut down, and that little tiny bit can really ruin the rest of it.
Yeah,
I think it's so important to have the confidence to be able to say, this is who I am. This is what I want. I'd love to take you on this journey with me. I think we'll have a lot of fun. And if it's not for you, it's not for you. That's okay. Yeah. And having that attitude is so attractive, because most guys are not doing, they're doing the opposite. They're like, you know, this is how it's going to be. Here are the rules. And then, you know, you can't force people to do anything. They might comply for a little while, but eventually if it's not what they want, they'll cheat or they'll lie, or they'll do something to go, you know, behind your back. And, you know, then you're like, oh, you're an asshole, you're a cheater, you're a liar, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, you kind of force them to do that. So any guy, like, when I hear a story about how a guy was like cucked or cheated on, or, you know, some girl did something to him, I'm like, all right, first off, you're not a victim. You probably created this whole situation. And even if you didn't, there's only power in owning it and saying that you did, because then you could learn from it. But if you just say, oh, she fucked me over, she cheated on me, she broke my heart, she's a horrible, miserable person with a toxic personality disorder, then, you know, that's great. You might feel better, but it doesn't help you long term. And you just end up repeating the pattern and finding more people to do that to you. And I always like to, I think I heard this quote from Carl. You remember Carl Wolf, right? You, we'd be in his group or something, and someone would be like, oh, this person, like, you know, I was in this terrible car accident. This person like T-boned me and they're such an asshole. And he'd be like, oh, well, how'd you get him to do that to you? They're like, what? What yeah. do you mean? And, you know, it was ridiculous, but it's really true. It's like, if you can own responsibility for whatever happens to you, like, there's immense power in that. And, we're kind of off on a tangent here, but the, you know, the point is it really takes practice and stepping into that tension that you talked about earlier to be able to have those conversations in the beginning. Because when you're first starting out and when you're dating and when you haven't had a lot of experience, you have so much invested in not losing that girl because of what she means to you. Like, oh, she's the hottest girl I ever dated, or she's the coolest and I don't want to lose her. And you have so much invested in that, it'll stymie you from having the conversation. So at least for me, that was a huge part of getting the reps in, basically. I don't know a better way to do it or a better way to, you know,
That's great. I mean, like you said, abundance is such a huge part. Like, if you're, you know, you've got, like, let's just say A to Z, A is approaching for the first time, Z is having, you know, let's just say sex as the milestone, you know, you're like, you know, ten steps in to get the first date after so many people have flaked, that you're afraid that, oh, what I'm going to say is going to turn them off at the start, all the way back at the beginning again. So having a quote unquote, a healthy pipeline of dates lined up or scheduled or whatnot, does take away a lot of that. And, you know, one disclaimer about it too, is like, it's not like you have to throw up and say all this stuff up front on the very first date in the first 5 minutes. You know, that will scare off a lot of people as well, if you don't, you know, frame it properly. I mean, this could be seated, talked about lightly on day one, or first date, and then the second time you see them, you know, share it again and dive a little bit deeper. So you just take, you know, baby steps. But as long as you have that overall theme and that belief, you gotta live it and breathe it, and have the abundance behind it to back you up, meaning they're not the only person you're going out with this week, whether it's a coffee date or just a group hangout, you know, having a healthy social life where there's something to do every day, it takes that, like I said, that fear of scarcity.
Yeah. So tell us about the relationship. So how does it work? You know, how did you have the girls meet? You know, tell us the story around that.
Okay. I tried it once before and that was complete disaster and unsuccessful, with what another happened? Girl.
Well, give us the drama.
Yeah. It went horribly wrong. That's where, I discovered that, her first impression when she met my other partner was, who is this person? Meaning, they didn't know each other existed. I just found out about her. So I you know, that exact thing happened. I prematurely introduced two of them to each other without each of them knowing, or at least one of them knowing, that I've been dating the other for X period of time, or even that they exist. So, you know, she was quite upset about, you know, where this person come from. You know, how come I just found out about her now? She doesn't know anything about me. And that kind of during date, not exploded. They both put on their game face and was really nice about it. But afterwards, the aftermath of it was all that. And that's when I learned that, oh, I didn't pace the situation properly and keep either of them aware and kind of build up to, you know, it's almost like a movie launch. You know, it's like a movie premiere. I didn't send out the trailer. I didn't like do my rounds and promotions. I didn't talk about it enough. Didn't do enough press junkets, whatever it is, to build up to this moment. So that's the first time I screwed it up. You know, there's no catfights or anything like that, but there was a lot of, like, you know, animosity during the, I guess you could say there's tension. I felt fine to me. I thought the dinner thing went great until afterwards I got the debrief that, that was the worst thing that could happen. I was like, what are you talking about? Like you showed her more affection than you showed me. I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, it was just like I couldn't do anything right that night. And that was because I was so oblivious to setting it up properly. So, you know, that was just an important part. So the second time around, when I introduced each of them to each other, it went a lot smoother because I was, you know, clear at the beginning about, you know, this is who I'm seeing, you know, oh, you guys, you know, throughout every time I would see each of them individually, I'll tell them about the times I hung out with them and also the things that would have in common with each other. So like, oh, you know, you'll like this about her. Oh, you know, that's funny. She does the same thing as you do. So like, as I'm dating them individually, I will talk about the commonalities, how much they will like each other, how much they will get along. Oh, you know, she likes the same color, you know, things like that to help kind of build up. So it's almost like they're friends from another lifetime before they actually physically meet each other. And that helped a lot to making the first date successful. I'm sure, you know, like you probably jump on a podcast with her too. She'll be happy to kind of share her side of the story as well. But that was, cool. Those are kind of things important to a first time meetup. And then since then, you know, it's just been, you know, going out on really after the first date of that. And then, you know, having, you know, sex together, the tension's released where any date after that, it's really just me chaperoning or tagging along. And it's really like kind of more so like their date. Like it's like they're dating each other and you're just there to tag along to make sure no weirdos come by or do anything weird, make sure your logistics are handled, your reservations are taken care of, bill is paid for, and the Uber is ordered and they're not standing too long in the heels. It's like a lot of that kind of management and making sure the two of them get along. Then really it's less glamorous than it sounds, but you know, that's really what a threesome date looks like.
So, yeah, it's I actually really enjoy it. You know, I've had my fair share and also had, you know, four or five some dates as well. and what I like about it is, you know, when you're on a one-on-one date, you're obviously, you know, there's only two people, so you're forced to kind of interact the whole time. I'm pretty lazy. Like, I would rather go out.
Strategic. You're very strategic about it.
Yeah, strategic. I would rather go out and just like let them, you know, blah, blah, blah all night, right? And just kind of, you know, interject when I feel like it. Decide what we're doing, manage all the logistics, and, you know, be that masculine energy that moves things along and facilitates the experience. And then, you know, let them kind of get in the, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but basically like at the end of the day, it's, you just get to chill and then you go home and, you know, have some fun.
Yeah, no, that's really, it's less like I said, less glamorous than what it sounds like to be on these things. I mean, if I had an analogy, like, I don't know, I'm not a parent. I know nothing about parenting, but it looks like it's almost like being a parent to one kid is the same. It's a slightly different than having being a parent to two kids at the same time. I would think it's something like that. If I'm not a parent, but
so, that might so it's, yeah. So technically, you guys are you're a throuple. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I guess that's what they call it. I mean, it's okay. I mean, the three of us. Yeah, the three of us hang out together, and they know of each other, and we go out.
And they're dating too, you could say. Like, yeah. do they call each other a girlfriend or?
I don't think so. One of the things that's also important as well is I make it an effort. I make a conscious effort to eliminate terminology because with it comes stigma. So if I call one of them a girlfriend, that elevates and comes with, you know, perceived, you know, responsibilities or titles or obligations or things like that. So I make a conscious effort to say, to eliminate label, eliminate title, because we're all just, you know, this is part of my spiel is that, you know, I heard this great quote about success is that, you know, success is not owned, it's leased, and rent is due every day. And I feel the same about relationships. It's like, just because I'm your boyfriend or you're my girlfriend doesn't entitle me to, you know, be with you, or it doesn't entitle me to, you know, be your partner. It means that how I view things is that every single day I should wake up and be my best partner or person for you, where you want to hang out with me amongst all your choices. My goal is to make sure you have, you know, a great time when we're together, to be, you know, funny or, you know, fun to hang out with. And I think that's more important every day to, you know, earn that than say being, you know, dubbed my girlfriend or anything like that and be lazy about it, you know. So that's kind of my approach to get rid of that title.
Gotcha. So I have some questions about how the hierarchy works, I guess. So you have a primary partner, you could say, and I know we're using terminology again, goes against it, but just for explanatory reasons, you have a primary girlfriend, and then the other one is, you see her less often, or are they both kind of at the same level in terms of primary, yeah, secondary?
I mean, what makes one primary over the other is like a big part of that is frequency, and that's only constrained by the fact that the other one is a single mom with two kids. Okay. So like, you know, really what makes one person a primary over the other? Like, you have more things in common, you spent more time together, you frequently see each other more. I mean, I guess that's what makes a primary. But like I said, I try to avoid those words, because then that, you know, presupposes that one's better than the other, when it should be like an equal playing field. Like, everyone, no one is better than the other person. It's not like a hierarchy. It's not like a job hierarchy chart, organization chart. It's we're all on an equal playing field, equal field, where, you know, we should enjoy hanging out with each other and be a great person that you want to be around. But I see one more often than the other because, you know, schedule makes more sense. A schedule for her makes more sense. You know, she consciously chose not to have kids either, and she doesn't want to get married. And so all of our values line up that make it
possible. You don't want kids.
Yeah, I don't want any kids either. Okay. I don't want to get married.
Don't want kids, don't want to get married. So obviously you're filtering for that. Can we talk about Adam? I mean, yeah, he's pretty public about it. Adam Lyons, our mutual friend, another guy in the dating coaching self-help industry. He's had, I think he's in a throuple now, right? And with kids. And I know he was a close friend of yours.
Yeah, he's been in a throuple for a long time now. And in his situation, one girl has a kid outside of the relationship, and he, you know, has become a dad to him. And then together they met a second girl, and now all three of them live together, and he has a kid with each of them. So they're like a family of one, two with one. One with the other, so family of four. So he's like, you know, a mutual friend, and he was a big.
Wait, there are three kids, right? So there's family of six.
Three. So he's the father to
up two,
three kids, three. So he has two.
Three. Okay.
Yeah, he has two kids with one of them. He has one kid with the other, and one of them has a kid from outside the relationship. So they have one, two, three,
four kids
together. Yeah. So he's
all live together. So seven.
Yeah, they all live together. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So he was a huge influence. You know, I think more so than anything, knowing someone that was able to create that as a reality for them is like why I like to, you know, what I shared in your group is like, he was like the Roger Bannister, you know, he was like the guy that ran the first 4 minute mile to break the limiting belief to let all humans know that it's physically possible to run a mile faster than under 4 minutes. And I think that's what it did for me. Like I wasn't like shooting to have a throuple relationship. Really, the throuple thing emerged because, it's just the next step in, you know, advancing. It's like, let me just try this and see what happens. So I think more than anything, he set the tone that, hey, this is possible, creating this life is possible. And that's one of the things I wrote down, that for anyone that's looking to do this, a critical part is understanding that, number one, it's possible. Number two, you deserve it and you earn it. you're capable of having this kind of life if you want to create it. As woo-woo and corny as that sounds, a big part of that is knowing that it's doable and you can have this life if you choose to do it. And then it's surrounding yourself by people that could help you take you there, like through your program, or any coaching or mentorship or whatever they need to, you know, make that a reality, kind of like, you know, like how you've created your life in Europe and the amazing experiences you have and the stories that you tell and the pictures you share on Instagram.
Yeah, pretty ridiculous stuff. So tell us, well, I've got a few questions. Like, any, what are some of the benefits? Well, the benefits are kind of obvious. What about this? What if you want to date outside of those two? Is that allowed?
Yeah, I mean, allowing and permission, all that is really just the tone that you set, you know?
Right. But there's no like, we're in a monogamous three-way relationship. It's just, you know, you spend most of your time with them. Do they go on other dates or do you see other people as well?
Yeah. I mean, they go on other dates. They tell me about it. Or, I, you know, one of the things I also tell them is like, not everyone is kind of like when I first got into this, I wasn't comfortable in sharing what I was doing outside of it. So the first step for me was, I'm seeing other people and, you know, and that was all I was going to tell them. But then over time, I became comfortable in kind of sharing what I was doing, going to details. And I think that a big part of that is, you know, letting them also know that, hey, I'm never going to pressure you to tell me more. I'm never going to pry and, you know, force you to tell me more than you're comfortable sharing. So if you want to just tell me about your day, great. If not, that's okay too. I just want you to know that you're okay with seeing other people. And to answer your question, you know, it's, you know, it's...
How active are they about seeing other people?
You know, one of them, like I said, one's a single mom. So, you know, whatever time she has being a single mom is tough. So I'm sure she, you know, she has maybe, I don't know how much effort she puts into seeing other people. I just like really my thing, and I'm less concerned about that. You know, that's, you know, a big part of that was, you know, learning to not compare myself to others or worrying about what they're doing. I just really focus on, you know, how can I bring the best experience to the people I'm dating when we're together and even when we're not, you know, through messaging and, you know, making sure they're having a great day, sending a nice little positive message without being too cheesy. So I just really focus more on being my best me and making sure they have a great time when we're together and less focused on who they're seeing. So I don't compare myself to them or feel less than the other person because they have more money or doing more, or they have more free time to take them to all these great experiences or whatnot. So.
Do they go out alone with each other without you?
I don't think so. I think that's only because of geography, because they're so far physically distant and their time and their schedule. If they have more time in the world, they would hang out with each other, because naturally if you like another person, you want to hang out with them. So I think just purely because of that constraint.
And how often do you guys hang out?
Probably like every other week, the three of us. Cause like I said, the hardest part is really just the schedule. Cause you're trying to align the schedule availability of three people that have, you know, three separate lives. And that's the biggest thing. But it's like, if we want to hang out, you know, more than that twice a week, I'm sure if no one had kids, no one had work, twice a week, three times a week, I'm sure everyone would want to do that.
Mm-hmm. What I've found and what I've seen in some friends of mine, I'm curious if this is also your experience. Most of the women I've dated, when I'm kind of like actively, you know, polyamorous or whatever, going out and dating other people, you know, I always give them the option, like, go ahead, do it. Like, I'm not telling you you can't, or, you know, you're totally free to do whatever you want. Most of them choose not to. You know, that for whatever reason, they're just like, well, yeah, I could, but it's almost like when you give them the freedom, either they just don't crave it as much, or it could be a small sample size.
Have you had that experience? What you're saying is absolutely spot on, because, and like our friend Adam Lyons, who's been, you know, incredible mentor to me as well, he has the best analogy I've ever heard, and I actually share this on dates as well. You know, relationships Here's another golden nugget for your listeners, courtesy of Adam Lyons. Relationships is like a butterfly. So if you have your hand open and your palm is too open, a butterfly would not want to sit on your hand because you're not protecting it from the elements of wind. There's danger. But if a butterfly is in your hand and you try to close it too tight so it doesn't fly away, it's going to feel crushed and captive, and it's going to want to leave. But if you hold your hand just curled enough where it's protected from the elements, it feels safe, but yet has the ability to fly away, it's going to stay. And that's how I see relationships, is like butterfly. And when you deliver it that way, you know, the girls love it. They right. love the analogy.
I'm a butterfly.
But it's really true. I mean, what you just said, we all want the freedom to go anywhere and do anything. But if it comes with security and the option to leave, why would you leave? And that's the environment that I do my best to create, where they, like I said, they feel safe. There's companionship. We do fun things. And they can leave this world anytime they want and come back, you know, anytime they want. When you make that scenario, it's very enticing for someone.
Right. Yeah. It's like, who wouldn't want to keep coming back to Disneyland, right?
Yeah, exactly. Without having to wait in line, you get the fast pass, you get as many churls as you want, you know, who want a year time pass. And then when you don't want to go to Disneyland, you don't go to Disneyland. You just go do other things.
Mm-hmm.
And analogy, whatever analogy you need to make to help the other, help it, you know, the bell ding for them.
Yeah, I like that. The butterfly. I'm going to definitely steal
that. Yeah, I've got a lot of mileage out of that one too. Good old Adam.
Maybe you're like my butterfly.
No, they love it.
Yeah. So do you have any, like, where do you see this relationship going? I mean, it sounds like you're, you know, none of you guys want to have kids or logistically, like, want to, you guys see yourself moving in together potentially in the future, or are you just kind of happy and hopefully going along at the same sort of level?
Yeah, what's next? I mean, I don't think I'll ever live with anybody because I like the freedom. I like the logistics of, you know, not having to worry about waking the other person up in the middle of the night. So I like to have my own bed. And so I don't think I'm going to live with anybody. And I don't think they want to either. So what's next? Like, that's a good question. I don't think I've thought that far. Like, I don't know, adding a fourth one to the mix. I mean, at some point, it's almost like, you know, what's fun to experiment? Is I add a fifth? Do I add a fourth? Do I, you know, like add another couple? I don't know. Like, I don't know what's kind of, I didn't think that far. Like, things are just pretty cool. Just keep on kind of going. So I don't think there's like an exit.
Yeah. I mean, my journey, how I arrived in my short-lived three-way relationship was, you know, was forced monogamy for many years. Cheated, and then learned to have abundance, learned to basically be single and non-monogamous, actively single, as they say. And then I think Genevieve was my first girlfriend, where we started having threesomes with other girls. And then that evolved eventually because I was selfish and greedy often in threesomes. You know, I was always focused on the new shiny object too much. She's like, I'm not getting enough dick. This is not cool. So I'm like, all right, well, let's try swinging. So then we tried swinging, and and that was a lot of fun. And that solved the not enough dick problem. And then I went to Burning Man and came back, you know, had brought one girlfriend to Burning Man, came back with a second girlfriend. And then a week later, celebrating, you know, the original one's birthday, that led to some like fiery jealousy disasters. Was shopping for one of them's birthday while getting roadhead, and she didn't like that we were, you know, fooling around without her. That created a ton of jealousy, and then the whole birthday party thing we were planning went to shit, and then. So the second girl ended up moving back to Australia, and then the first girl broke up a week later. So They say never bring anything to Burning Man that you're not willing to lose. Including a relationship.
But I mean, like, you touch upon a couple of things that are common in, I guess, in polyamory, where it's like, number one, it's important. I mean, it really is like important that the other person has some conscious awareness of wanting to kind of create this too, because you can't like reason with someone about these things if they're not kind of like on the same mindset. So that's important. And then the second thing you kind of touched upon is like boundaries. You kind of don't know what the other person's boundaries are typically until you break them. Because like you don't know what the universe of these boundaries are for people unless you do something that violates it. That's typically the only time you find out about it. So when you have enough of these experiences, you're able to articulate boundaries and things that you should bring up. So like literally I sat with her and we created almost like a principles book on boundaries and things that we should and shouldn't be upset about. So like literally we talked about things like, hey, there shouldn't be any jealousy if I'm, you know, how much money or I spend on this other person shouldn't affect you. And there shouldn't be any jealousy about it. Cause if I look on the other side of the book, what if a guy that comes in that has, you know, a bunch of money and offers to fly you out to Paris, I shouldn't, be jealous about that because he's able to take you on these grand experiences. You know, I might be concerned about, you know, your safety and everything like that, but I shouldn't because of how much money he's spending on you and vice versa. You shouldn't be jealous about me if I bought a particular gift for one person. And we talked about that. We talked about like how much, you know, if one person gets invited to something, the other person doesn't, there shouldn't be any jealousy about it because it's like a time restraint thing. You know, if it's not fair to you, if I'm working and you want to go on this experience, I shouldn't be able to prevent you from going because I'm working. So you should go, you can go with some other guy. So we talk about all these, the more you can identify these obstacles or boundaries before they come up, the more likely there won't be, an aftermath of this stuff. And the person, like I said, the person has to be, you know, have some level of, desire to, for these self-improvement things to be able to, you know, talk about, you know, like you talk about these, what you're really doing is you're kind of like talking about these hypothetical situations that may or may not happen. But if it does happen, this is how we should respond to it. And not everyone's up for that kind of like analytical kind of talk, but it's important because, you're basically, if you're telling someone that, hey, this argument that we may have potentially in the future, these are some things we could do to make sure it doesn't happen. So the person has to put some conscious effort into, your partner has to put some conscious effort into being talking about these things.
Yeah, it's so important to talk about those things and try to address them before they happen, because you avoid so many, you know, uncomfortable and negative sort of events happening.
Yeah.
I have another friend, you might know him, Terrence Thames. He was in a relationship. This is, I've spoken with him in probably, you know, 8 or 9 years or something, but he had a, I forget what he called it, but like a constitution for his relationship where they like wrote everything down. He told you about that too.
Yeah. I spoke to him within the last year or so. And yeah, he would have these bylaws, constitution, whatever you call it, contract.
A contract.
When you might want to phrase it however you want to phrase it. That sounds a little binding, I guess, a contract, mm-hmm. but like
a little too legal.
Yeah, exactly. Might a little bit too technical. Technical.
Like a Magna Carta or something.
But I mean, like I said, it's also great content. You know, it's great things to discuss, fun things to discuss during a date. And it's content and it's something that connects the two of you or three of you, because you have this thing together. You have this like this Bible of your relationship that you wrote together.
Yeah. It's I mean, that's what's kept America together so long as the Constitution, right? Without that, we'd all just be running around doing whatever. So yeah, I think that's, so you guys kind of did that. Maybe just not as structured, it sounds like, right?
Yeah, I mean, we spent time writing things down. Like one thing I made sure to write down also is that, you know, as we explore this together, this thing is going to be constantly evolving. I'm going to do things that will probably upset you only because we haven't talked about it and it's an un, undiscovered boundary that you didn't even know that you consciously have. And if that, or when that eventually happens, we shouldn't get mad at each other because we didn't know this thing existed. And let's talk about, you know, how that feeling was developed. Like mm-hmm. there was something that happened before in your past that we get to explore on, you know, how you could overcome that. So it takes a lot of, like, you could get kind of deep about it, or you could keep it light, you know? So, but mm-hmm. that's, you really evolved it. It's constantly evolving too. So.
Yeah, it's very cool. So, would you recommend this for other guys?
Yeah.
Most guys, anyone you wouldn't recommend it for?
No, I think, you know, everyone's in their own journey and phase in their, you know, their life. So I just think it's a great pit stop, whether someone chooses to be your destination. I think an experience, whether, you know, like, I think it's a thing to check off on your bucket list of experiences that I think, you know, every guy or person should have, you know, whether it's, you know, like multiple partners at the same time, a polyamorous relationship, or just being monogamous. I mean, I think the fun in life is exploring variety, as long as everyone is, you know, safe and aware about what's going on. So I don't think there's anyone that shouldn't try it, because, like, there's, you know, a funny thing is a lot of people I meet and I talk about this too, especially couples, they say, I should never, I don't think I could ever do it, but I think that would never work for me. I don't think I could share my husband or, you know, wife. And, you know, that's something that people get to explore, because the fear, the not wanting to share someone comes from possessiveness, comes from the lack of, from the fear of losing them, comes from scarcity, feeling like they're the only person on the planet they could ever have a partner with. You know, those are a lot of, like, fears that I think everyone should explore. Not everyone was willing to. So, I mean, not everyone willing to kind of step on the ledge and explore these things. You know, like, I have a fear of the ocean. Does that mean I want to go scuba diving? Like, I probably should in life, but not everyone. But I don't want to go get over my fear of the ocean, because I don't think I'll need it much in life. And not everyone chooses that. So should everyone do it? I think so. Because I think, you know, relationships, having fulfillment and exploring these things, exploring, you know, your personal weaknesses and how you can improve on that, pays dividends across the entire board in life. So, yes, I encourage it for everybody. It could be a disaster and not look out the way it should be, but you might dream of it. But it's definitely something I think everyone should explore, because it's like it's a spectrum of life that there's a lot of joy, I think, you find it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a great way to, you know, just to explore yourself and have a fun time and see what happens. And I'm a big fan of just, like, you know, let's see what happens. Kind of my approach to a lot of things.
For spontaneity. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, dude, thanks so much for sharing about your stories and, you know, intimate relationships. It's awesome to have you on here and sharing this knowledge with everyone.
You're very welcome. It's fun to look back and see how far this process has gone, and how anyone, wherever they're starting now, that they can be here or beyond or wherever they want, if they just put a little conscious effort into making it happen and connecting with you and being around the right people that could take them there. So,
yeah, and it's so cool to see the transformation. Like, you know, I'm thinking back to that first video you did.
We can put a link in the show notes to it. They could see, you know, what life was like, or how I was like.
Oh my God, you're so different.
Crazy. Different, yeah.
I'll try to put the link below. If anyone has questions or anything like that, can they contact you or reach out?
Yeah, I mean, they could, you know, submit an inquiry on your website, and I'm sure you could forward the email over or forward something over. That's probably the easiest thing to do.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thanks so much, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
All right, awesome. Have a fantastic day, Robbie.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.